We're doing the story of Esther. We're about to begin. We're almost there. We all know the overview of the story, right? King Ahasuerus makes a big party, 6 months long, pretty fantastic party. And then he makes a 7-day party for the local people of the capital of Shushan. And on Shabbos, he invites Vashti. And we know he kills Vashti. He appoints Esther. He he raises Haman. Haman makes himself into a god, has everyone to bow to him. Mordechai won't bow. He puts out a decree to kill all the Jews. And then Esther invites Ahasuerus to a party on the 3rd day. She says, someone wants me and my nation dead. The king says, who? And she says, it's Haman. And he has Haman hung. And then a few months later, she asks him to rescind the decree, which he agrees. And then the end of the story, on the 13th, the Jews get to fight their enemies. That's a very coarse overview of what we learned as children. We've learned much background to the story. And one of the interesting points is, what is the theme of the story? What is the message of the story? What are we supposed to take away from this story? So the Medrash, when we look at the Medrash Rabbah will often tell us, different rabbis, when they would introduce the story of whichever story, different Megillot, or stories in Tanakh, would begin with a verse or theme. And that's giving us a picture of what is the theme here. When they wanted to teach the story of Esther, so Rav, who was one of the great rabbis of Babylon, Rav would begin the story with the following verse. The verse says in the book of Devarim, "Vehayu chayecha teluim lecha mineged." The verse in the beginning of the book, in the book of Devarim, in the end, in Kisavo, tells us that during the time that the Jewish people will transgress and be exiled, they will reach a point where their lives will be hanging. That, say our sages, is the 24-hour period after Ahasuerus took off his ring. Meaning it was only on the next day that Haman writes the letter. So let's review the story for a minute and let's zone in, because Rav tells us, zone in. The pivotal point of the story is Mordechai doesn't bow. Haman gets upset and he invites Ahasuerus to a feast. They sit down to eat, and Haman tells Ahasuerus, he says, there is a nation, a problematic nation, that I'd like to bump off. And Ahasuerus gives him the ring, and the next day he writes the decree. So from the minute he gives the ring to when Haman writes the decree, 24 hours pass. When Haman received the ring, the Jewish people started feeling like their life was hanging. Vayuchayecha teluim lecha mineged. Rav explains that's talking about those 24 hours. And now what we're about to discuss is something that I did not know my whole life, and it changes the whole picture of Megillas Esther. And I want to read to you from the commentary of the Anaf Yosef. He quotes the following from the book Yosef Lekach. And he says like this, Haman, he's writing a summary. Haman was concerned. If he comes to Ahasuerus and openly says, I want to annihilate the Jews, Ahasuerus might refuse. Because the Jewish people had a reputation. We will see later on, the Medrash says that even though Koresh gave them license to ascend to build the Beit HaMikdash, after they started leaving, Koresh saw that his economy was hurt, his philosophers were hurt. Every aspect of higher society was hurt. He said, oh my gosh, how did I let the Jews go? Stop. He says, whoever crossed the Euphrates can stay in Israel. But whatever Jew hasn't yet left can't leave. I'm scared what's going to happen with my country. So Koresh, who had encouraged the Jews to leave, suddenly saw how much it hurt his country that the Jews had left. And then Koresh took back the permission that he had originally given. So Haman knew that Ahasuerus valued the Jews. Because even when Ahasuerus told the Jews, stop building the Beit HaMikdash, he writes the letter like this. He says, I've looked over the history books, and I've come to the conclusion that this city of Jerusalem, forever in history, has developed the greatest kings in world history. And their kings have been so powerful. And so therefore Haman says, if I approach Ahasuerus and tell him, let's annihilate the Jews, Ahasuerus might not agree. Because the people are a people of value to the empire. And Ahasuerus knows their value. And so that's why Haman speaks in riddles. He says, Yeshno Amechad. There is this nation. Mefuzar umforad benamim. He is scattered. He's interspersed among the nations. Bechol medinot malchutecha. Throughout your kingdom. Vedateyem shonot mikolam. Their religion is different than everyone else's. Vedateyem melech einam osin. They don't do whatever you decree. And I don't think it's in your interest to let them stick around. Haman never says a Jew. If you look closely at the verse, he says there is this nation. They're scattered. So Haman purposely comes to the king and says, there's a nation that's not listening to your decrees. If it's okay with you, I want to write a decree to annihilate this nation that doesn't listen to your decrees. I'll give you 10,000 bars of silver for the job. And Ahasuerus says, you, my dear Haman, if you say it's a good idea, you don't have to pay. Hakesef natunach, keep the money. And the nation, lasot bo katov beinecha, do whatever you think is right to do with this rebellious nation. Ahasuerus has never told it's the Jews. Haman writes a decree. Haman writes a decree. And the king didn't decree it.
Why the king didn't ask? No, really. With the brilliance of this Ahasuerus, you ask who is this nation.
So Haman feels like if I can get this decree out, and Ahasuerus won't know who it was, he won't be blamed, and he won't be able to take it back. Ahasuerus sees that Haman isn't interested in telling him who the nation is. He notices that in the conversation, that Haman just said, there's this nation, they don't listen to you, they're scattered. Ahasuerus starts thinking, I got many nations mixed in, right? I've taken over 127 nations here. So he gives Haman the seal, and he says, I trust you. You write the decree you think makes sense. Now, ordinarily, the king writes his decrees. But Ahasuerus says, I don't know who to write about. I'm not going to write the decree. You've done your research. You write the decree. No one knows who Haman means. Word goes out on the streets of Shushan that Haman has gotten license from the king to deal with a nation that doesn't listen to the king's decrees. The Jews right away have that inner gut, oh no, we're done. That's the 24-hour period that the Midrash is talking about. Rav says, Vayuchayecha teluim lecha mineged. You're going to feel like your life is hanging in the balance. That's the 24 hours from when Haman has that fateful conversation and Ahasuerus gives him the ring to when the decree goes out. But we're not done yet. It gets better. And this will answer many questions in the Megillah. Everyone knew that Haman hates the Jews because Mordechai wouldn't bow to him. And they knew that Haman was a descendant of Amalek, a descendant of Agag. And that deep down inside, he retained that enmity that the Jews had won his ancestors at war almost half a millennium ago. So they said, he must mean us. Haman writes a decree. What does the decree say? The decree says, what does the decree say? Just a second. I'll tell you the pasuk. It says, "Vayishlach sefarim bechol medinot amelech." He sends decrees throughout the land. Lashmid, laarog, ulaabed. He says, "I want you to annihilate," but he doesn't say who. He says, "Liot, be prepared for a day. There's a nation the king is very upset at, and the day is the 13th of Adar, and on that day we're going to tell you who that nation is, but you should prepare yourself because the king is hiring every citizen to go out to war against the specific nation on that day who the king is very upset at. There's a nation that doesn't listen to the king's decrees, and so the king wants everyone to be prepared on the 13th of Adar." So everyone gets a letter. The messengers start running out, and every city, you hear a clanging of the bells. Everyone gather, the king sent a message. A letter comes in. King Ahasuerus sent a decree. Everyone should prepare themselves for the 13th of Adar. On the 13th of Adar, we're all going to war against a nation that doesn't listen to the decrees of the king. You will find out who we're going to war against on the 13th of Adar. Everyone must have started paying their taxes, right? I'm saying they all got nervous. The Jews knew they were done. The Jews knew it was meant for them. But Haman, when he sent out the decree, did not write which nation. He leaves it blank. That way the Jews can't come in and argue with the king. They can't say, "Your Majesty, there's nothing to..." They have no grounds to say anything. Haman didn't say it was them. And that's why Esther can turn the tables on Haman, but no one else can. The Jewish people can't approach Ahasuerus because the decree never said it was them. In the Megillah tells us the final version. And aside from that, there was a version that was sent to the leaders. Meaning, the governors of each town got a letter which said, be prepared, it's the Jews. Our intention is to fight the Jews. On the 13th of Adar, you'll tell the people, it's the Jews. So two letters came. One for the masses that said, be prepared, there's going to be a war against the people who have not been faithful to King Ahasuerus. And another letter that was sent to the leaders, to the governors of each area, telling them, you will fight the Jews on this day. And so the Jews got even more scared. Because they said, this is Haman's plot, it must be against us. And that's the continuation of the pasuk that says, "Ufachata laila v'yomam." The Jewish people got scared night and day, because they saw that every day word got out to further in the Persian Mede Empire that this decree, this massive pogrom, was going to happen. What did the decree say? All nations will gather against a single nation that is scattered among you. So the Jews in each town said, who does he mean? He must mean us. But it didn't say.
Which month did the decree went out?
The decree went out in Nisan.
That means it was for 1 year later in Chodesh Adar.
Correct.
1 year of trembling and fear for the Jewish people.
So Haman is hiding things. But Mordechai gets Tachegin Ktavadat. Mordechai gets his hands on the hidden letter that was sent to the governor of Shushan. And that's what he sends to Esther. He tells Esther, you have to come with this to the king. Because the king doesn't know who Haman is out against. Ve'et patshegen k'tavadat asher nitan b'shushan natan lo la'arot et Esther u'la'agid la. He tells Hatach, Esther's messenger, he tells him, bring back this letter. Because with this, Esther has to approach the king and tell him, Haman wants our people dead. And then she can say, you see, he's plotting not only against you, he wants me dead. The final verse is, the Torah promises the Jewish people won't believe they're going to live. They're going to believe their lives are over. That's when the Jews understood that all nations were preparing for a massive pogrom for that day. The common folk didn't know who the pogrom was against. The Jewish people knew full well they were the target of this new decree. And this whole understanding of the Megillah, this answers a lot of things, because then that explains how Mordechai could turn the tables on them. That he could say the decree was actually against those who don't value the Jews. They're the ones who aren't listening to the king's decree. Mordechai could reinterpret the original decree. He could say, everyone knows the king loves the Jews. King Ahasuerus is a friend of the Jews. He married a Jew. And when the king said he wants a war against all those who are against the king's decrees, he meant all those who are against the Jews who are his friend. And that's what the Megillah says, that suddenly all the nations started mityahadim, being nice to the Jews, because they were scared of Mordechai. Because suddenly the new decree said the king wants war against the nations who don't like the Jews. That's what the king meant all along. Mordechai could reinterpret Haman's decree. So that's the switch. What the decree didn't say who the fight was against. And so the fight became a fight against Amalek. And then everyone knew Haman and his 10 sons were from Amalek, and they were hung. And so now Amalek, which was also interspersed among the nations, because the Assyrian Empire had exiled them as well, so now the war became against Amalek, and everyone joined forces with the Jews to fight Amalek on the 13th of Adar. It was a war against the enemies of the Jews. So this pshat, again, is based on the Yosef Lekach, the Radal, the Anaf Yosef quotes it over here. And so Rav tells us the theme of the Haggadah is, where did we reach this nadir, this low point that we didn't believe in our lives? We thought it was all over. And the idea of us being compared to the moon. The moon seems like it's disappearing, yet it comes back. The Jewish people at the depths of the exile thought they were gone, but they came back. That's the theme according to Rav. So the takeaway from the Megillah is, you think it's all lost, you think everything's gone, you don't believe there's going to be an existence to the Jewish people. Here's the real story, and you should know we still made it back. And big time, right? Back to the temple, etc. That's Rav's interpretation, the theme of the Megillah, the message of the Megillah. Okay? So that's one interpretation. And I think the Yosef Lekach, to my mind, it was an eye-opener. That whole interpretation of what Haman was doing with the decrees. That's number one. The second interpretation that's given is, it says in the curses, "Baboker tomar mi iten erev, uva erev tomar mi iten boker." The curses describe how when the day begins, you'll say, "Oh, I wish it were night," and then nighttime will come, it'll get so scary, you'll say, "I wish it were day." Meaning the times will be so bad, you won't have a moment to breathe. You'll always think maybe when the morning comes, it'll be better, and then when the morning comes, you'll say maybe nighttime will be better. Morning will come, you'll say, "I thought last night was bad, this morning's worse." And then nighttime will come, you'll say, "I thought the morning was bad, this night is worse. I wish I were back in the morning." Things will get perpetually worse. Nipachad levavcha, from your fear and what you see. Our sages say, what is this pasuk talking about? Baboker tomar, when you'll start the exile of Babylon, you will say, "I wish it were the end of the Mede Empire." What does that mean? That means, right. That means when we left Egypt, we had a golden era. We had the period in the desert, we had the period of Yeshua, we had the period of the judges, we had the period of King Solomon. Things were nice. We kept moving up. When we had the temple destroyed and the Babylonian Empire took over, we lost our sovereignty. And what happens next is we're basically going from hand to hand. So we're given license to come back to Israel and rebuild the temple, but we're still under the Persian Mede Empire. And so the Medrash says, when the beginning of the Babylonian Empire, the Babylonian exile will happen, you'll be wishing already for the end of the next exile, the Persian Mede Empire. You'll begin the Persian Mede exile, you'll be wishing for the end of the Greek exile, the Greek servitude, because the Greeks will take over from the Persian Medes. And when the Greek enslavement or overpowering will happen, you'll be wishing for the end of Edom, because you finished with the Greeks, and on their tails came Edom, the Romans, and we haven't finished with them yet. We're back, but we're not done yet. So the Megillah, according to this, is telling us the beacon of light in the midst of all this turmoil. Look at how we're dealing with different empires taking over, and yet behind the scenes Hashem is taking care of us, that we won't be wiped out. That's, so the Megillah is the message, and that's what the Gra says. The message of the Megillah is the idea that we're gonna last. This, something's gonna remain. We're gonna make it. And that's a phenomenal strength. The Gra says, we didn't discuss that this year, right? The Medrash of the Gra. No. Okay, the Gra brings the following story. The Gra says, there was a prince. His dad was very upset at him. And so his dad kept telling him, you got to behave or I'm going to banish you from the kingdom. And the prince kept misbehaving. And the father warned him again and again. And the kid wouldn't listen. And finally the father says, I've had it. You're not behaving, you're going to have to learn your lesson. So the prince says, but what are you going to do? He says, I told you what I'm going to do. I'm going to exile you far away into a forest that you've never seen, and you're going to spend a while there because you're misbehaving. I've had it with you. So the kid says, but you're not serious. He says, no, I'm serious. That's it. You've had so many warnings, you're going to pay. And so he says, please don't. He says, I give you all these chances. You're still not listening. No, time has come. You have to pay your dues. And so he escorts him to a chariot, and he tells his guards, go, and they start riding. And after about an hour, he starts realizing he's in a place he's never seen before. And they keep riding and riding deep into the night and the next day. And they're going further and further away from the palace. And finally, they reach the middle of this huge forest, and they tell him, honorable prince, the king says you should get off here. So the prince doesn't know what he's supposed to do. He gets off the chariot. They turn around and they leave. They're riding. And he says, wait, I got nothing to eat. Wait, guys, hello. And they're gone. And there he is in the middle of the forest all alone. He looks around. He sees nothing. Nothing. He starts looking for food. He says, oh boy, I better figure out where I'm going to sleep tonight. What am I going to do? So he starts looking for food, and he comes behind a certain bush. He sees some berries. He starts picking the berries. He looks behind the bush. There are sweet little cubs. Wow, what sweet little cubs. He looks at them. They're so sweet, and suddenly he hears footsteps behind him. He turns around, and there's Mama Bear. She's really upset. He starts running, and he tells himself, what am I doing? A bear can outrun a human. And he, in his mind, he's starting to review everything he learned about what those nails can do and those teeth, and he's running for everything he's worth, and she's hot in his tail, and he's running, and he could feel her breath right near him, and he takes a flying leap, and he yells, he puts his hands over his head, and he's waiting for the pounce. He's waiting for her to pounce on him. And she doesn't. He's lying there with his head down, and he's all shaking. He's sure he's dead. He turns around, and he sees there's a knight. One of the king's knights was just passing in the forest, and with his axe, a second before the bear pounced on him, hacked off the bear's head. And the knight is there in all his glory, and he looks down at the bear, and he looks down at the lad, and he's out of breath. And before he could say anything, the knight rides off into the sunset, and he says, "Wait, mister, hello, hey." The guy's gone. He looks at the bear, the head. He says, "Okay, at least I have the fur. I'll be able to use the nails for something. I'll be able to eat the meat. I got some food." He starts tearing it apart. He wants to use the fur to make himself some protection. He starts to put together some kind of fire. And he looks up, and there's movement ahead. And he looks more closely, and a figure comes out of the brush. And he sees it's the king's advisor, the king's top advisor. He's so happy to see him. "Oh, it's so good to see you." And the advisor says, No, you don't understand. I'm going to kill you." The prince says, "What?" He says, "Yeah, I'm going to make sure there's no heir to the throne. And then when your dad dies, it's going to come to me. Say your last prayers." The kid looks at him, and he's got no weapons. And he sees the advisor, and it's already starting to get dark. And he starts running. And he runs behind a tree, and the advisor stands on the other side of the tree. And his sword is drawn. And the kid runs to this side, and the advisor runs to that side. And he runs. And every time he runs, the advisor is hot on his tail. And the advisor yells at him, and he says, "Stop, I'm going to kill you. You have no way out. You're finished." And the kid runs, and he reaches a clearing, and he runs into the clearing, and the advisor's hot in his tail, and he's got nowhere to hide. And again, he sees he's got nowhere to ride. He takes a flying leap. He covers his head. He's waiting for the sword to come in, and it doesn't happen. He turns around and he looks, and there's an arrow shot straight into the king's advisor, and then another one, and then another one. And he looks and he sees there's a knight again. Not the same knight, a different knight. One of the king's knights are there, just in the nick of time. He didn't get killed. He looks at the knight, he looks at the advisor, and the advisor's shot, and he's falling, and he's finished. And he starts running after the knight, and he says, "Mister, wait a second." And the knight rides off into the sunset, and he says, "Wait a second. The first time I thought it was a coincidence, but a second time, that means that even though my father's really upset at me, and he banished me out into this exile, he's paying attention. He has his knights. They're not allowed to talk to me, but they're keeping an eye on me. I'm going to make it." That's the story of Purim. The Medrash says the story of Purim is a miracle that happened in the midst of the exile. The Jewish people had room to think God had left them. Look, he destroyed his temple. So Hashem made a miracle out in the exile. A miracle to remind us that throughout the exiles, Hashem is still with us. So the second theme the Medrash taught us for the Megillah is, we're about to enter a period of almost back-to-back empires ruling over Israel. We will go from Babylon to Persia and Mede, Persia and Mede to Yavan and Kastim, Yavan and Macedon, Yavan and Macedon to Edom and Yishmael, and it will seem like there's no respite. We're going from hand to hand. The Megillah teaches us we're going to make it. That's the second theme. That's the second theme of the Megillah. The third theme. The pasuk says in Mishle, when the rulers are pious, the nation can be happy. But when the ruler is wicked, everyone has to worry. You have to realize that the leadership makes a huge difference in your life. Sometimes you say, "Do I really care if it's Netanyahu or who was against him? Tzipi Livni, who was against him? Herzog. Do I really care if it's Trump or Clinton? Chazal tell us the leadership will define your life more than you realize. Achashverosh is to remind us that when there's a wicked leader on top, everyone suffers. Don't think it won't affect you. The fourth theme Rabbi Levi taught, you have to see where stories begin. The story of Purim began when we did not conquer the land of Israel. The story of Purim is about the love for the land of Israel. Recognize that our danger, our problem, Haman, came from the fact that when it came time to conquer the land of Israel, we were negligent. We let Amalek stick around. We said, let's have some pity about some people of Amalek. Let's let them stay around. And Hashem says, it's either you or them. And if you're going to try to be merciful and say they can stick around, they'll come back to haunt you and they won't let you stick around. So that's the fourth theme over here, that this the story of Esther is a product of what Shaul did, the idea of responsibility of taking over the land of Israel. There are more, but I don't know that we should spend more time. Maybe we should move on to the Megillah itself.
Enemies, what is Amalek, what you say, how did they recognize who is the enemy?
I don't know.
Because they had like 70,000 people they killed
right.
In a very short time.
Right, I don't know the answer to that.
They didn't have a uniform or whatever.
I don't know. I don't yet know. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bedvaro. תודה רבה. טוב. So we'll begin our story. Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. In the days of Achashverosh, the word Vayhi denotes that there was problems. It was a sad time for the Jewish people. What was sad? So one of the commentaries explains, based on a Drash HaSaran that we learned in the beginning of the Drash HaSaran, he writes that when the Tower of Babel was built, it was a very bad time for mankind, because Hashem created the world with conflicting empires so that the monotheists would always have where to run. And when everyone united under Nimrod, then Avraham Avinu, the monotheist, would have nowhere to run. That was the danger. That's why Hashem interfered with the Tower of Babel. The same danger happens when Achashverosh comes to power. That the danger was that everyone was united under one king, Achashverosh. Why was he called Achashverosh? He had many names. Artaxasta, Koresh, Achashverosh, he had many names. Our sages say the name Achashverosh is to denote that he is the brother of the other Rosh. Achashverosh. He is like Ach Shel Rosh. He's the brother of the other head. What does that mean? So our sages say there were Rashim. There were heads, meaning there were people who began concepts for humanity. How so? So it says, the head of creation, the head of man is Adam. The head of the murderers is Cain. The head of the people murdered is Hevel, Abel. The head of people who flee and escape, who make it out of danger, is Noah. Everyone started a concept in the world. The idea that when there's... Hevel didn't manage to escape when Cain wanted to kill him. Tuval Cain didn't manage to escape when Lamech killed him. Cain didn't manage to escape when Lamech killed him. The first time we see someone who taught us you can escape is Noah. The first person to be circumcised is Avram. The first person to be willing to give up his life for Hashem is Yitzchak. Yitzchak starts the concept of dedication to the point of being willing to give up one's life to Hashem. The first person who works to be completely whole in the service of Hashem is Yaakov. The head of all the tribes is Yehuda. The head of pious people is Yosef. He went above and beyond the call of duty. Look at how he took care of his brethren. Look at how he didn't take advantage of a loophole. Technically, his master was a eunuch. Maybe there was room to sleep with his wife. No, she's a married woman. He doesn't look for loopholes. The head of the Kohanim is Aaron. The head of prophets is Moshe. The head of those who conquer the land of Israel is Yoshua. The head of those who divide the land of Israel is Othniel ben Kenaz. The head of those who anoint future kings is Shmuel. The head of those who get anointed by God is Shaul. The head of those who compose songs in honor of God is David. The head of those who build, who erect edifices in honor of God is Shlomo. The head of those who are destructive, who destroy God's home, is Nebuchadnezzar. The head of those who are willing to give over the Jewish people to annihilation and initiate a concept among the nation that Jewish blood is free is Ahasuerus. The one who begins the concept that you can have a citizen next door and you can murder him because he's a Jew is Ahasuerus. And so Ahasuerus is given that name to denote he is the brother of another head. He is just like Nebuchadnezzar. If Nebuchadnezzar is given the title he's the head of the destructive ones, he destroyed the temple, see, Shana Ahasuerus was also the head. He was the head of the one who was willing to give over Jewish lives for pay or for free to make Jewish lives something that's negotiable. Their lives are not of value. So that's why he's given the nickname Ahasuerus, the brother of another head. He also initiated something in the world. He started something out. And a key question we have to ask is, why did the Jews deserve this decree? So there's a little known medrash. The medrash says, Bayamim Haheim. The Megillah begins with, in those days. Well, it just said, Bimei Ahasuerus. Why does it say, Bayamim Haheim? So the medrash says, there's somewhere else it says, Bayamim Haheim. If you look in Nehemiah, it says, Bayamim Haheim. Nehemiah says, I saw the Jews, and their businesses were open on Shabbos. And they were doing commerce, and they were pressing their grapes on Shabbos. So that also begins with Bayamim Haheim. So the Medrash says, the introduction to the story of Esther is Bayamim Haheim, in those days. There's a code there. The Medrash is telling you, you're about to see the Jewish people enter a period of grave danger. It began with the Chilul Shabbos. The story of Esther begins with the Jews in Israel openly desecrating Shabbos. Bayamim Haheim. Ay Bene. I didn't follow again. In heaven, Hashem said they have to. They're going to pay the price. So the truth is, we should read the full medrash. The medrash says, "Bayamim Haheim." This is one of the places that the heavenly court came with notes in front of God. They came waving flags, waving notes, and they said, "Master of the world, your temple is destroyed." And this wicked one is sitting and making parties, 6 months of party, 7 days of party. So Hashem said, given days corresponding to days. Hashem answers the angels and he says, why was he able to make that party? Why was it that they were forced to stop building the Beit HaMikdash? Hashem said, corresponding to the days they transgress Shabbat, give him a time to party. If they're not resting when they should, then I'll give that rest to the nations. So the nations were given parties, time that they could just rest and party, the beginning of the Megillah. So that means that Hashem says, I gave you a gift, my Jewish people. You're supposed to rest on Shabbos. Yeah, if you won't use it, if you will work on Shabbos, then I will let the nations have a rest. Well, you're still the chosen nation. It's a way of Hashem saying, the major theme here is that things revolve around us. We have to know we have responsibility. And when we don't live up to the responsibility, it affects everyone. It wasn't good for the nations to spend 6 months partying. What good came of it? But they were given this break. Why were they given the break? It was a show to the Jewish people. Look at you guys. You're sitting and suffering in Jerusalem, but it's your fault. You're supposed to rest. You're supposed to take Shabbos off. Shabbos is the day we declare Hashem as king. Now you're going to have to sit in these feasts, declare Achashverosh king. Right? I said, declaring Achashverosh king. A Jew doesn't enjoy being in a bar on Shabbos. A Jew says, I want to be with the family on Shabbos. To sit with Achashverosh and hear their vulgar jokes and conversation wasn't a pleasure. It was a task they felt like they had to do. Anyways, they were not there for the 6 months. They were there for the 7 day party. Not the 6 month party. Coming back to our Megillah. So we have the Achashverosh is sitting on the new throne he built, and he's sitting comfy because he thinks the 70 years are up and the temple hasn't been rebuilt, and with this they've overcome the prophecy that Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu said, and the prophecies of Daniel, that the Jewish people would take the throne from him, and he's sitting comfortable. And he makes a 6 month party. Who can party for 6 months? 6 months, it says every day he would show them a treasure that was different than the day before. He had so much wealth. We discussed where he got his money from, right? And at the end, we discussed what happened with him and Vashti, and we discussed Esther and Mordechai, right? That's where we left off. Where Esther, right? Esther was taken, and he liked Esther. Yeah? What? Yeah. And we discussed the assassination attempt. So we're up to Haman. Right? We're up to Haman. And we discussed Haman's perspective and Haman's connection to the serpent, right? That one nation, one guy. We discussed this last week, right? Yeah, on Thursday night in our class on happiness. Amina, it's right. Okay, so our story begins. Haman is raised above all the nations, above all the advisors, and Haman right away makes a decree that anyone that comes to the king uninvited gets a death penalty. Meaning the king likes to party, and Haman helps him party. He makes a decree that will ensure that no one can question what Haman does. Anyone that wants to talk to the king risks their life doing so. Because the decree is that if you show up uninvited, the guards don't just take you away, they take a person away and decapitate them. The person never comes home alive. No one can bother Achashverosh. He's a partying guy. The only exception is if Achashverosh extends his scepter and it touches the person lives. Now what Haman did was Haman ensured that Achashverosh sat in the back of a room And at the front of the room, the guards had instruction, don't let people approach him. If they only cross the door uninvited, you whisk them away and kill them. And so it was pretty well known that if you tried to approach Ahasuerus, you were at least risking your life. And now Haman has succeeded in secluding Ahasuerus in his ivory tower. Ahasuerus will only know what goes on with his subjects through Haman. And Haman can report to him and tell him everything's doing great. And Haman effectively is in full control of the kingdom. Now in Persia Mede, you have a law that says a king cannot rescind his own decree. Decrees have to be eternal. We see this in the book of Daniel as well. So it makes things tricky. Haman is appointed above all the advisors. And not only is he appointed above all the advisors, everyone must bow to Haman. And here we have two opinions as to whether Haman wore a garment that had idols on it, wore a necklace that was an idol, or declared himself a deity. So Mordechai won't bow. Ordinarily, we do bow in honor of kings or nobles, but not when they declare themselves a deity. So the servants ask Mordechai, why don't you bow? And Mordechai says, I'm a monotheist. I can't bow to any god. And so the servants tell Haman, what a nasty thing to do. Until they told Haman, no one noticed. That Haman didn't notice. After they tell Haman, you know, Mordechai isn't bowing, then Haman notices that Mordechai won't bow to him. You guys know the Medrash that Haman was technically Mordechai's slave. He had sold himself as a slave to Mordechai. You know the Medrash that Haman had a history. He was a barber in his youth. We'll get there. Haman's gone up in the ranks, and it could be that his not noticing Mordechai was because he chose not to notice Mordechai, because he wasn't interested in fending off with Mordechai yet. So Haman sees that Mordechai won't bow to him, and he gets very upset. He and Mordechai know why Mordechai won't bow, so that puts all of Haman's power into question. So Haman wants to go out against all the Jews. It's not enough to go out only against Mordechai. Once they tell him Mordechai is a Jew, and that's why he won't bow, so he says, okay, then we got to get rid of all the Jews. And so he draws lots. That's a very interesting thing. Why does he draw lots? So Haman was into drawing lots. The Medrash says he would draw lots among the king's servants. And whichever servant would come up, whichever officer, noble advisor would come up, he would violate that day. That was another way of demeaning everyone. Haman's the boss. He does what he wants with everyone. So Haman draws lots. The theme of Purim, to a large degree, is the idea that Hashem is watching over us. The lot is the exact opposite, in Haman's eyes, of Ashgacha Pratit. Hashem isn't watching over them. The lottery is going to decide which month they're going to live or die on. So Haman draws lots from the month he's in, Nisan, to next year's Adar, 12 months. And it falls out on Adar. So Haman knows that Moshe Rabbeinu died in the month of Adar. How did he know that? How come the non-Jews know when Moshe Rabbeinu died? Why is that important to him? So Haman says, great. It fell out on a month that they have bad luck. Adar. Okay. So now he has to sell his case to Ahasuerus. So he comes to Ahasuerus, and we learned one Medrash at the beginning of tonight, and now we're going to learn another approach in the Medrash. Okay? But we'll pause.